Okay, let's do a quick mental exercise. When I say deer hunting, what's the first image that pops into your head? Be honest.
For most people, it's probably that solitary figure in the woods. Dawn is breaking, there's mist on the ground, you're holding a rifle, maybe wearing some flannel.
Right, waiting for that one perfect shot. It's very romantic, very visceral. Man versus nature.
Exactly, it's elemental.
But what if I told you that in 2026, landing a truly massive white-tailed deer, and I mean a trophy buck, the kind that ends up on a magazine cover, has almost as much to do with real estate strategy and data analysis as it does with being a good shot.
I'd say you've been reading the same briefing I have. It's a fascinating shift, isn't it? We love to chalk up hunting success to luck of the draw.
Oh, for sure. Being in the right tree at the right time.
Yeah, but when you peel back the layers on these consistent success stories, luck is usually just a tiny footnote. The real work, it starts months, sometimes even years, before you ever pick up a weapon.
That is exactly what we are unpacking today. We're doing a deep dive into this really comprehensive guide. It's titled 15 Steps to a Big Lease Property Buck.
And this was written by Josh Honeycutt for the Basecamp Leasing blog, just published February 6th, 2026.
And this isn't just some guy's theory. Honeycutt is an outdoor communicator. He's been in this world since 2010.
And he has the receipts to back it up. He talks about taking a 165-inch mainframe 12-pointer in Kentucky. For anyone who doesn't track scoring, a 165-inch deer is just, it's a dinosaur.
Oh.
A massive animal.
Wow.
And on top of that, a whole bunch of 130 to 140-inch bucks. And the common denominator for all of them.
They were all on leased properties.
Every single one.
So our mission today is to decode his process. It's this 15-step system that, honestly, it reads less like a hunting journal and more like a military operation mixed with a commercial real estate deal.
I love that comparison. We're going to look at how you secure the land, how you audit it for value, and then, how you actually fill that tag.
It really treats hunting land like an asset class. It's about investment and return.
Absolutely. The ROI just happens to be a wall hanger buck instead of a dividend check.
So let's jump in at the start, the acquisition phase. Honeycutt calls this determining your leasing strategy. And it seems like you have a fork in the road right from the get-go.
You do. You can go the old school route, driving around, knocking on doors, dealing directly with landowners.
The for sale by owner approach.
Right. Or you can go through an agency. And it's really the classic time versus money trade-off.
That do-it-yourself way has a certain nostalgic appeal, though. It feels gritty.
It does, but Honeycutt points out that in today's world, it is just fraught with friction. You've got liability issues, you might not have a written contract. Frankly, it can be chaotic.
And you could do all that work just to have a landowner change their mind a week before the season opens.
That's the nightmare scenario. So he argues that using an agency, like Basecamp Leasing, just gives you a streamlined process. It's safer.
It's like buying a used car off Craigslist versus going to a certified dealer. You're getting protections, contracts, insurance.
Verified boundaries, all of that.
Yeah.
But this is where the economics get really, really interesting. It's not just about finding a listing, it's about when you get to see it.
Okay, you're talking about the pay-to-play tier system.
Exactly.
I saw this and it reminded me of a video game or some kind of software subscription. You've got the free tier, then a fork horn for $29, an 8-point for $69, and then the top tier, the wall hanger, for $249.
Right.
My first thought was, why am I paying $250 just for the privilege of looking at something I might want to rent?
And that's a fair question, but you have to understand the market dynamics. Good hunting land is incredibly scarce. It's super competitive. You're not paying for a listing, you're paying for information asymmetry. You are buying time.
So speed is the currency.
Speed is the only currency that matters. Honeycutt explains that the wall hanger membership gets you the fastest look.
Yeah.
When a prime property hits the market, say 200 acres in a top-tier county in Ohio, it doesn't sit there for weeks.
It's gone in hours.
Sometimes minutes. By the time that listing trickles down to the $69 member, let alone the free tier, the prime real estate is already under contract.
That makes perfect sense. It's like high-frequency trading on Wall Street. You're paying for the data feed to be milliseconds faster than the other guy.
Exactly. So if you're serious about a 165-inch buck, staying in the free tier is basically guaranteeing you're just picking through the leftovers.
Okay, so you've paid your dues, you're a wall hanger member, now you're scanning listings. This part feels a bit like Zillow for deer hunters. You're looking at acreage, habitat, topography. How do you narrow it down?
The funnel strategy. You start macro,
Yeah.
what state? Then you go to a region, then you drill down to a specific county. But the real pro tip here is what he calls the digital scout.
I loved this part. You use apps and maps to study the area around the lease before you even get in your car.
You have to. You're not just looking at the property lines. You're looking at the context. Does it connect to other big blocks of timber? Is there agriculture nearby? Is it a natural bottleneck? You could probably reject 90% of properties just from satellite imagery without wasting a dime on gas.
Which brings us to section two, the assessment. Because eventually, you do have to get boots on the ground.
Unless the market is so hot, you have to put a deposit down sight unseen. Which does happen. It's risky, but sometimes you have to do it.
But ideally, you walk the farm. And you're not just out for a pleasant hike. You're auditing the land for what he calls the big three.
The holy trinity of whitetail survival. Bedding, food, and water.
Right.
If a property doesn't have confirmed bedding areas, that's thick cover where they feel safe food sources and water, it doesn't matter how pretty the view is. It's not going to hold deer consistently. They might pass through, but they won't live there.
But then Honeycutt adds a variable that I think most people completely overlook. Step six, gauge the access availabilities.
This is so important.
To me, access just means, you know, is there a driveway where I can park my truck? But he means something way more tactical, doesn't he?
Oh, this is probably the most critical insight in the whole assessment phase. Access isn't about parking. It's about your tactical entry and exit. You have to evaluate your route in relative to those bedding and food sources, and crucially, relative to the prevailing wind direction.
So paint the picture for me. Why does a bad entry route just kill a lease?
Okay, imagine you've got a property with a giant food plot right in the middle. The deer are there every single evening, but the only place to park is on the edge of that field, and the only path to your stand forces you to walk across that open ground.
So just to get to my hunting spot, I have to spook the very animals I'm trying to hunt.
Precisely. Honeycutt is crystal clear on this. If deer can see, hear, or smell you arriving and departing, it won't work.
Mm-hmm.
You could have a property crawling with giant bucks, but if the layout forces you to alert them every time you show up, they'll just go nocturnal.
They'll just wait until you leave?
Every time. And Basecamp leasing agents, they actually assess this access factor, specifically when they evaluate these properties for listing.
Okay, so that makes sense. Now let's talk about the neighbors. Step seven is assess the neighborhood. You obviously can't just walk onto their land to scout, so how do you do this?
You go right back to your digital tools, your apps, like OnX or HuntStand, and you want to guesstimate the details. What you're really looking for is the size of the neighboring tracts of land.
And I'm guessing bigger is better?
Generally, yeah. It's a probability game. Honeycutt lays out the correlation. Larger neighboring tracts usually mean fewer hunters.
Right. If your 100-acre lease is surrounded by 10 little 10-acre lots, that could mean 10 different hunters plus their families and friends all pressuring the same deer herd.
It's a firing squad. Whereas if you're next to a single 500-acre farm owned by one family who only hunts a couple weekends a year,
it's basically a sanctuary.
It's a sanctuary. And lower pressure means one thing, an older buck age structure. Deer get to live longer. They grow bigger antlers. It's a direct line from who's my neighbor to how big is the buck on my wall.
So you've checked the biology, the access, you've digitally stalked the neighbors. Now you have to give it a grade.
Yep. He calls it huntability. It's a subjective score, but it's crucial. Does the land lay out in a way that actually lets you stay off the whitetail's radar? If the answer is yes and the price is right, you move.
Which brings us to locking it down. The source gets into the mechanics here. Make the deposit, sign the contract, pay the balance within a one-week deadline. It's very strict.
It has to be. If you miss that deadline, it goes right back on the market. It really reinforces that business-first mentality. But once that check clears, the dynamic shifts completely. You're no longer a real estate investor. Now you're a property manager.
This is the post-lease scouting phase. Honeycutt says you need to learn the entire farm. And this is where the tech comes in. He talks about hanging trail cameras, but he makes a big distinction between the traditional SD card cameras and cell cams.
And this is a huge technological shift in hunting. A traditional camera, you know, it records photos to an SD card. You have to physically go into the woods, open the camera, pull the card.
Which goes right back to that access problem we talked about. You're spreading your scent every single time you check it.
Every time. A cell cam sends the photo directly to your phone. For a lease hunter who might live 3 or 4 hours away from their property, this is an absolute game changer. You're getting real-time data, a live feed of your deer inventory, without ever stepping foot on the property and alerting them.
It's remote surveillance. You're literally building a dossier on specific bucks from your couch.
Honeycutt calls it a property buck inventory. You aren't just wondering what's out there. You know, okay, that big 10-pointer is hitting the Oak Ridge at 6:00 p.m.
He also mentions deploying preliminary tree stands. I like that he uses the word preliminary. It implies you shouldn't get too attached to one spot just yet.
That is a key tactical point. A lot of hunters find one good-looking tree, they build a permanent stand, and they sit there for 10 years, whether it works or not.
Guilty.
We all are. But he advises setting up a few base stands based on your initial scouting, but keeping a lightweight, mobile tree stand ready for what he calls hang-and-hunt missions.
Hang-and-hunt.
It means you carry the stand in on your back, climb a tree you picked out, hunt from it, and then take it down with you when you leave. It lets you be fluid and adaptable.
So as the season goes on, the deer will teach you where you actually need to be, which might be 50 yards to the left of where you first thought.
Exactly. You have to have the infrastructure to adapt. Adaptability fills tags. Stubbornness does not.
Okay, so we've bought the lease, we've scouted it, we've got cameras spying on the wildlife. We are ready for section 4, the hunt. This is where the rubber meets the road.
Or where the arrow meets the shoulder, hopefully.
Yay.
Hopefully. Honeycutt talks about patterning a target buck. This is where you take all that intel, the camera photos, the footprints, what you see while glassing, and you piece together this big buck puzzle. It sounds like detective work.
It is detective work. You are trying to predict the future behavior of a wild animal based on its past behavior. And the whole point of solving that puzzle is to identify the X.
The X sounds dramatic, like X marks the spot.
It basically is. It's the interception point. So think of it this way. A buck has a bedroom, his bedding area, and a kitchen, his food source. He travels between them. The X is the specific spot on that line where you can kill him.
But it isn't just any spot. He says it has to satisfy a really strict set of constraints.
A very strict set. One, it has to be close enough for an ethical shot, you know, 30, 40 yards for a bow.
Yeah.
Two, it has to be a place the deer actually moves through during legal shooting hours. If he only walks there at midnight, it's completely useless.
And three, bringing it all back, it has to allow you undetected access to get there in the first place. That is a lot of variables to juggle. It's like trying to predict a solar eclipse while you're standing on a moving train. If any one of those three things is off, the whole thing fails.
It's incredibly difficult. That's why a 165-inch buck is so rare. If it were easy, everybody would have one. But Honeycutt shares a specific tactic for timing the strike that I found incredibly nuanced. It is all about the wind.
Okay, so we all know deer use the wind to smell danger. That's hunting 101. The conventional wisdom is you want the wind blowing from the deer towards you.
So he can't smell you. You face into the wind. In a basic sense, yes, that worked for young deer. Maybe some does. But mature bucks, these animals are paranoid. They're survivors. They've lived 5-6 years by not getting shot.
They're a different animal.
Totally. And they often will not move in daylight unless the wind is in their favor. They want the wind blowing from where they're going so they can smell what's ahead of them.
Okay, wait, hold on. This sounds like a catch-22. If you hunt with the wind perfectly in your favor, the buck feels unsafe and he won't show up. But if the wind is in his favor, he smells you and runs off. How do you possibly win that? It sounds like the dare holds all the cards.
You win by using the just-off-wind strategy. This is really high-level stuff. Honeycutt suggests hunting a wind direction that is largely in favor of your target buck.
Largely in his favor. That sounds almost suicidal for a hunt. You're practically inviting him to smell you.
It's high risk, high reward. The whole idea is that the wind makes the buck feel safe enough to move during the day because he thinks he has the advantage. He trusts his nose. But you micro-tune your stand location so that your scent cone, the stream of your human smell, just misses the buck's actual travel line.
Oh, I see. So it's geometry.
It is absolute geometry. Imagine the buck is walking due north. He wants a wind coming from the north so he can smell what's ahead. If you set up directly north of him, he busts you. Game over. But if you set up northeast of him, and the wind is coming from the northeast.
The wind's kind of hitting his cheek.
Right. He feels safe because he can smell most of what's ahead. But your specific scent stream is blowing just behind him or just over him.
You're threading a needle. You are giving him this false sense of security while you are hiding in that tiny little margin of error.
That's it, exactly. It requires an intimate understanding of that specific property and how wind currents move through it. You have to know how the wind bends around a ridge or drops into a hollow. You're not just sitting by a tree. You're calculating fluid dynamics.
That is wild. It really changes the definition of patience, too.
It does.
Yeah.
It might mean you only hunt that specific stand 2 or 3 days a year when the wind is perfect. Not just good, but perfect.
So step 16, which isn't really numbered, but it's the culmination of everything, is fill your buck tag.
Mm-hmm.
And when that moment comes, you have to make it count. But he circles right back to the beginning. He says, the process starts with base camp leasing.
It's a full circle journey. That wall hanger membership was the ticket that got you into the game, but it was the strategy that won the prize. You can't execute that just off win strategy if you don't have a lease that lets you control all the variables in the first place.
So looking at this entire process, from swiping a credit card for a membership to calculating wind angles to trick a genius-level deer, what's the big takeaway here for someone listening?
I think the revelation is that modern hunting, at least at this trophy level, is really a discipline of information management.
Mm-hmm.
It requires capital, both financial and time, and it requires data analysis. You're analyzing the market to find the lease, you're analyzing the map to find the biology, and you're analyzing the microclimate to find the shot.
It totally dispels that myth of the lazy hunter just drinking coffee in a box somewhere. If you're following these 15 steps, you are working harder than most people do at their day jobs.
Absolutely. And that lease property buck isn't just a trophy on the wall. It's a validation of that whole process. It's proof of concept.
It's fascinating stuff. It really makes you look at a patch of woods completely differently. You don't just see trees anymore.
No, you see bedding areas and access roads and wind tunnels. You see a puzzle waiting to be solved.
Well, there you have it, the strategic roadmap to the trophy of a lifetime. It does leave me with one final thought to chew on. Honeycutt emphasizes that the process starts with the lease, but success ultimately relies on the hunter's ability to interpret the wind and the neighborhood. So, in the pursuit of the big lease property buck, is your most important tool your rifle, or is it actually your ability to analyze a map and a contract?
That is the question.
Thanks for diving in with us today. We'll catch you on the next one.